T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Sue Thomas is back from jury duty, and Dave Klein is cranky today. I kind of like that combination. I don't know why. I think it's going to make for a good show. You okay, buddy?
You okay? Yeah, I'm doing okay.
All right. He's still transitioning. He's not becoming
that
a
way.
Woman. No, I know. But he's new to the 97.1 side, so he's still growing pains, Dave, is what we'll call it, right? But it's
That's
just
fair.
A little different over here. Sue, how was jury duty?
It was great. First of all, I forgot my headphones there in the car, so okay, that's what's happening over here. That's how bright
okay.
I am. I went in, instead of going in at 8 o'clock in the morning like they usually do, because I've done this 5 or 6 times.
Well, you live in the city. You pretty much have to do it every couple of months, don't you?
So, yes. I went in, and instead of going at 8 o'clock and sitting until 5, I went in at 1 and sat till 5. That's not bad.
Oh, that isn't bad at all. I didn't know that. So you had to... Are they doing split shifts, essentially?
Yeah, so there are fewer people in the jury room, so you're not all crammed in there watching the Robin Smith.
It's a COVID thing, maybe?
I think probably it is.
And is this something they let you know ahead of time, like what shift you're
yes.
on? Okay, that's perfect.
In fact, in the mailing, and you kind of don't believe it when you get it, and you actually call the night before to find out if you're even needed to show up.
That's nice.
So I called, and they said, yep. So I showed up, but I sat half the time instead of the full.
You sent a picture. I think you were like juror number 180.
It's my new lucky number.
Right. And I said, like, late in the day, this was in the 4 o'clock hour, and you hadn't been called yet. I'm like, just leave. Come on over. There's still time to do some traffic. Are they going to know that you're gone? But you eventually, they didn't see. Were they calling jurors for a potential trial?
Yeah, they call.
Okay.
And, you know, I was in a batch, and they didn't have a microphone and were all spread up on the upper level, and the woman would come by like a town crier and say, 130, you know, and then somebody would pass it along.
Right.
But yeah, they called. And when my group was called at the end, I thought, oh, man, I almost made it. And then you went up to the woman and she said, we're going to go ahead.
So would you prefer to have been, because I could think of a lot of different things that I would want to do outside of work, and I have a pretty cool job, but jury duty is not one of them.
No.
It really isn't.
No, I would not prefer to be on one. I've done that before. It's not that great. It's rather boring. And this is civil courts, so I'm not solving a crime. I like to solve a crime, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And
there,
I would not
no
solve
doubt.
A crime. This is more like, how much money did this woman get for being in an accident? You know, that sort of thing.
I used to cover some interesting trials. Most trials are boring and they're tedious, and
yes.
you have a lot of testimony and everything has to be entered, and you know, you sit there for hours and hours. And as you know, not every trial is a murder case or something that is salacious. But again, maybe I've told you this before. I know, Dave, I've talked about it with you. I always feel like I should have written some of this stuff down in the 1980s when I was covering a trial or I was covering some of these things, because they would have made for great, at the very least, episodes of Law and Order. So just a couple examples. So there was a guy in Columbia in Boone County named Ralph Davis. This was in the 1980s, and he killed his wife, and the body was missing. Well, he was accused. His wife goes missing. They can't find the body. I love this story. And Joe Mosley was the prosecutor in Columbia at the time. He ended up being a state senator, really, really good guy. And I always thought he was going to write a book about this, and maybe he did, and it didn't go anywhere. So Ralph Davis has a storage unit, right? One of those orange deals. And he doesn't pay the bill for the storage unit, right? In the storage unit in Jefferson City is a vehicle, and it's the vehicle that he blew his wife's brains out in. So they took the car. They got the car. This was, by the way, what's fascinating about this case is it's my understanding that it's the first trial in the country where DNA evidence was used, and they convicted someone. And by the way, this was a death penalty case.
This was the '80s.
This was in the '80s.
Okay.
They convicted someone without a body, so there was no body ever found of his wife.
But we found the car with her DNA in it.
Susan Davis, I think, was her name. They found pieces of her brain on the steering wheel, literally. So the prosecutor at the time rebuilt this vehicle. Like, he built the car in the courtroom.
Awesome.
I'm in the main courtroom at the Boone County Courthouse, which is kind of a cool room. You see these things on TV. They look like conference rooms sometimes, and they are. But in this case, there was some history to it. And it was a hell of a trial. It was really fascinating. He was convicted, I think, then put to death, a while after that. So that was an interesting one. And this one, I remember this guy. I wish I could remember his name. But there was a guy who was an ambulance driver from, I think it was Macon, Missouri, which is north of Columbia, if I'm not mistaken. It was Macon or Mexico. So he comes down to Columbia with a bunch of paramedics because it's an emergency. EMT conference at the Columbia Holiday Inn, whatever that place is called. The one hotel, Dave, that was out there south of
town. I know what
you're
talking about.
It doesn't really matter. So he comes in, and he's accused of raping a woman in his hotel room, all right? So some of the details are a little sketchy, but what he did was he drugged her, and then he raped her. Here was his slight mistake. Not that he wasn't a piece of human debris. He apparently recorded it. And he
usually a bad sign.
That's a bad sign. But here's how they found this out. Now, I was told this after the fact. I don't have this 100% buttoned up, but I'm going to tell you what I was told from someone who knew about this case. So when we were all recording shows in the 80s on VHS tapes, all right? So you got a brand new VHS tape, right? You put it in the machine. What's a show you'd record?
I would have recorded Law & Order.
Right, Law & Order. That was a great show in the 80s. Yes. So you record Law & Order. And then you record another episode of something. And then you rewind that tape and you're like, I'm going to use that tape over again. But at the very beginning of that tape, when you put your VHS tape in, you're going to see like one frame of whatever you recorded. Remember that?
So there was
a frame of the hotel room when the jurors requested the video. Because here, I'm leaving a little
and
bit.
And all it took was a second of the tape?
Well, I'm leaving some of it out. They thought that they had this, they were pretty convinced that he recorded this thing. They were trying to prove it. So he recorded over it with the Weather Channel. And his argument was that he claimed he was a pilot or amateur, something like that, and he needed to know what the weather was going to be like. So that's why he recorded the Weather Channel. But when the jurors took this into the room and they were, looking at the evidence, apparently there was that one little frame that came up, and that may have turned him. Now, again, I never spoke to any members of the jury. I talked to people who were familiar with the case and who knew the judge. I think it was Gene Hamilton at the time, and he passed away several years ago. But that would have been a Law & Order episode right?
For sure. And the first one you talked about, I would be surprised if Dateline hadn't aired something like that. I mean, that's got Keith Morrison written all over it, doesn't it?
That's a movie script,
and
right?
I think it was just ahead of the time when it comes to some of those, because the big case from Columbia that got all that attention was the kids that were accused of murdering the sports reporter from the Columbia Daily Tribune in the parking lot of the Tribune.
When was that?
It was about 15 years ago, and then they couldn't solve the crime. Then finally, there was a kid that came forward and said he had dreams about something. The whole thing was convoluted, and one of the kids was eventually let out of prison. I'm forgetting some of the details and the names here, but most of the people in Columbia that I know, there are friends of mine that had this kid as a babysitter, so they knew these kids, and they are still convinced that you know, that he did it. But that's they ended incredible. Up overturning that conviction.
I love all crime shows. I realize the world does, too. But the Datelines, any of thing like that. But to sit in a, I've never actually been on a jury for a criminal trial. It's all been civil. And Michael has, my significant other, and he said, in the city, and he said it came down to a teacher, because, you know, it's everybody in society sitting around a table that you've never met before, who saw the fingerprints on the inside versus the outside of a window, who cracked the case for the jury. And I have never experienced, mine's wow. more like, how much money are you going to give to this woman who
right,
ran
right.
it? But, you know.
Yeah.
It's, but wow, that's great.
Well, one of the funny things, too, I always remember this from that trial with the ambulance guy from the EMT, is there was a prosecutor at the time. He ended up being, he was the guy who replaced Joe Mosley, who was the longtime prosecutor in Boone County. His name was Kevin Crane. I got to know Kevin a little bit. He became a judge then. After, you know, he was a prosecutor for a while. But I remember in that trial, it's so funny how you can flash back to things. Here I am, a reporter. I have my little tape recorder in my notebook. I couldn't use the tape recorder in the courtroom, but, you know, for interviews afterwards. And at one point during the trial, Kevin Crane, and he's kind of a newbie prosecutor at the time. You know, he's kind of cutting his teeth a little bit. And something happens. He goes, "Your Honor, I object." And he had this southern drawl, "Your Honor, I object." And the judge said, "On what basis?" And he said, "I don't know. I think I'm just supposed to." That was his response. And it was something along those lines. And like the whole, and this was a pretty serious case that I was describing, but the whole jury, I think the guy was even on the stand at the time, but the whole jury cracked up because it was a moment of levity.
Okay, if that would have happened and you were, if your rear end was on the line and that was your lawyer saying that, how are you not getting a retrial? Am I wrong? Because I think I'm supposed to.
I think in that moment, Kevin was just like, "I am new at this, and what do I say is the basis?" Anyway, it was
so,
kind of fascinating.
So, Sue, is your jury duty check going to help buy that e-bike?
Good question, Dave. We were talking about the e-bike last week. I got a picture of it over the weekend, and the text just said, "Damn it." I'm assuming that that meant purchase has been made.
I really liked it, and I bought it.
Why are you feeling bad about it?
I don't know, Mark. I went in to buy shoes, and I came out with that silly, I love it. I kept saying it while I was in there. Dang it! But I love it. Dang it, but I love it, and I still love it.
You should just be happy with it.
Okay,
that's
all right. I'll bring it in. I want you to try to ride it. I'm going to ride it to work later in the week.
That could be a little challenging for me. By the way, I'm going to play golf tomorrow, I think.
Are you?
Yeah,
good.
For the first time in like 2 months.
You're back on it.
Right. I hit balls today. Did not go spectacularly well, but it did not go as
poorly
as I anticipated. Now, the golf course is a different beast. And
so
we'll see
if you're
what happens
angry
tomorrow,
then we'll know
oh,
why.
Oh, you'll know.
Okay.
I think you'll have a good sense of it by 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So, Sue, the Emmy nominations came out today. Did you see these?
Oh, some of those are in. Go right ahead.
There's a few shows.
Every
time I think I'm ahead of the game when it comes to entertainment, especially television, apparently I'm not. So, Best Drama. Dave, did you see these earlier?
No, I did not.
The Boys on Amazon Prime. What's interesting about that is I thought that was a really good show the first season. I lost interest the second season. Got away from it.
Don't say The Boys. What's it about?
A bunch of foul-mouthed superheroes. It's a very unique superhero R-rated show.
Oh, okay.
But it's interesting. I like it a lot. Bridgerton, have not checked that one out on Netflix. Seems a little stuffy to me, but people like it.
Well, I watched a few minutes of it. It's almost like it's kind of a reality show, but of a different time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The Crown, same thing.
Yeah.
Love The Crown.
Yeah. You like it, Dave?
I do.
Okay,
I really do.
I watched that at the beginning and I lost interest. But again, I've heard that it's really gotten good. So sometimes you give up on these things. And perfect example for me, Game of Thrones. Gave up after 3 episodes. Had to go back. One of my favorite shows of all time.
I haven't watched it.
I'm not passing judgment on these shows. Although I'm going to pass judgment on The Handmaid's Tale because that thing is just weird.
I haven't watched
it. I tried so hard because everyone said it was so good and I don't like it.
Is that Hulu?
That is Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah. Lovecraft Country on HBO.
Nope, not seen it.
Nope.
What is that? Do we know? Where's Buffa when you need him?
The Mandalorian, Disney Plus. Now, I'm pretty happy with this because I thought the first season of The Mandalorian, did you watch The Mandalorian?
No.
Dave, have you seen it yet?
I have not. Is that another one of those shows where you have to watch
Star Wars series?
Wars person
right,
either,
it's
Dave,
a Star Wars
so there we are.
So The Mandalorian, the first season was rather uneven. I thought there were a few episodes in the middle that were just embarrassingly bad, but the second season was awesome. And one of my favorite things about The Mandalorian is my daughter and I. That's our thing.
Oh, that's nice.
Every Friday when they release the episode, she's like, "We got to watch The Mandalorian." Of course, Baby Yoda played a very, very important role in dragging her into being
okay,
a fan of the Mandalorian.
Okay, can I ask a quick question? When is that of the Star Wars, you know, like, where does that fall in Star Wars, the Mandalorian? Is it Baby Yoda, so it's way back when Yoda was, okay, it just occurred to me and I've answered my own question.
No, not necessarily, because we don't, that's a good question. And I think we learned a little bit about that at the end of the second season. But I have kissed girls and don't wear a pocket protector, and I can't give you all the answers to that like Carl could or something like that.
I don't want the Carl answer. I want the normal person to answer.
It's just a fun... I like Timothy Oliphant quite a bit. I don't know if you remember him from Justified. He had a great role in The Mandalorian
this year, so they
get some good...
Mandalorian takes place in 9ABY, whatever the hell that means.
That really cleared it up.
9 years after A New Hope.
Oh, okay. 9 years after... Yeah, that if I would have watched A New Hope, that would help. It's my bad for asking the question.
Pose on FX. Have not heard of that one. That is late 80s, early 90s, the story of ball culture and the gay and trans community and the AIDS crisis and capitalism. That's what it says here on IMDb.
Seems like a lot for one show.
Yeah, it sure does. And then finally, This Is Us. And people love This Is Us. And Dave, I know you get in touch with your feminine side.
I do.
You watch This Is Us, but I've never
seen that show.
Yeah. I've heard good things. People love that show. Okay, comedy is interesting. I think we're not going to do everything here, but I have to go over some of the main categories. Blackish was nominated. Huh? Cobra Kai was nominated. I was thrilled to see that because that show has gotten really good.
Horrible.
Oh, come on, Sue. It's
terribly
funny.
Acted.
It's
I hate
funny
you know
and
what?
It's campy.
I watched the first one and I thought, I can't do it. It's just so bad. But
the
everybody
first episode,
loves it.
You mean?
Yes.
Well,
it was horrible.
Okay, but that thing started as a YouTube series. And
oh, it did.
I think they were filming it literally. If you watch the angles in the first season, I think they were doing it basically on iPhones and stuff. So, the production quality. I think everything about that show got better. Having said that,
it's cheesy.
I don't think it belongs in the best comedy category for the Emmys.
No,
I think it's good entertainment. I love the nostalgia. I wouldn't put it in the top tier.
Fair.
Now, this one I would. Here's a great, great nomination. Very surprised by this. Hacks on HBO.
Hey, we like Hacks.
It's outstanding.
Hacks.
Hacks is good. You ever
H-A-C-K-S?
Watch Hacks?
Jean Smart. Jean Smart is so funny.
She's having a great year.
Anything with her in it.
Yeah, so she plays sort of not a washed-up comedian, but she...
On the brink of being washed
up. Yeah, she's
up.
A Las Vegas comedian, and I don't like this character, but that's part of the point, the young girl who is assigned to write for her.
Mm-hmm.
But Jean Smart is fantastic, so it's great to see that. The Flight Attendant, very good show on HBO Max.
That.
Yeah, that
okay,
was
that's
good.
Have you watched that, Mark? You need to
watch all
that's
of it.
That's in
yeah,
the
I
comedy
like, I
category?
It is, because it could be, I see what you would mean about that. It could be a drama, but The Flight Attendant is funny.
Huh.
The Kaminsky Method, I finally got into that. Really
loved
good
it.
Stuff. Pen 15 is on Hulu. I don't know that one at
Never
all.
Heard
Do you know
of
that
it.
One? And then Ted Lasso, Apple TV Plus. The new season's about to come out. I love it, and despite my... I'm not the biggest soccer fan, Sue, but Ted Lasso is, I loved it. It's outstanding.
I don't want to have to get another service, Dave, if you watched it.
You know, if I would subscribe to another service, it would be
Apple TV.
Apple TV just for that show.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Same here.
It's
Everybody
a very,
it.
Very funny show. It's a half hour show, so you can get your arms around it. And he's great. He was nominated too. Lead actor in a drama series, Sterling K. Brown. We got a St. Louis entrant there, Jonathan Majors, Lovecraft, Josh O'Connor, The Crown, Bridgerton, Ray Jean-Page. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Billy Porter for Pose, and then Matthew Rhys for Perry Mason. Perry Mason, not a lot of love, but Matthew Rhys got
dark,
nominated.
But
let's
I liked
see
it.
Here for lead actor in a comedy series, Anthony Anderson, Blackish, Michael Douglas, Kaminsky.
Oh, so great.
William H. Macy for Shameless. That's a show that I used to watch. Gave up on that one quite some time ago. Sudeikis got nominated for Ted Lasso.
Good.
And Kenan Thompson for Kenan. And then you have, you know, I made the mistake of printing out the entire list of Emmy nominations, and there are so many categories here that you never would think would be a category, because they do, like, outstanding period costumes, outstanding cinematography for a reality
There
program,
are still pages upon pages out there.
That
Dang.
I haven't picked
yeah.
up yet from the printer, right? Well, we'll talk to our buddy Jessica Radloff sometime out in Hollywood. I didn't want to bother her because she's writing a book right now, but she's our go-to person in Hollywood. We're off and running here for a Tuesday edition of the show. We do have this confirmed for Thursday. George Gray, who, of course, is the voice on The Price is Right. Yay. He's a St. Louis native. He's coming in to do The Price is Wrong. Klein, this is going to be your first time doing The Price is Wrong, and you're going to love
excited.
It. It's very fun. So
I was actually just texting with George during the first segment, so we're good to go there.
Senator Talent's on tomorrow, and John Ziegler, I cut him off. I cut Zig off last week on a topic because we got very, very distracted, so he's going to come back, and I know he has opinions on everything that's happening with COVID in California. Speaking of California, Gavin Newsom is not going to be able to identify himself as a Democrat on the recall ballot.
What?
I guess he's just going to be listed as non-binary. I have no idea. That story is very interesting. We'll get to that this afternoon. And my go-to guy, one of them in Washington, Josh Krasauer, senior national political columnist for the National Journal, is coming up next. Batten down the hatches, we're on our way for you. 535 Gold Street to my head. Started digging my grave and I'm making my bed. Feeling more like. Hey, we have Sue's News. This is something different with Sue this afternoon. That's been a little rare. That's coming up after 4 o'clock. Also, there's an interesting case that Ben Crump and Al Sharpton are taking on in Arkansas. And it's a white teenager. Some details on that in the next hour. Josh Krasauer from the National Journal with me this afternoon. He's a senior national political columnist and baseball expert. Josh, how are you?
It's great to be back on the show, Mark.
What'd you think of the home run derby last night?
You know, I was rooting for my guy Juan Soto. I was probably the only one when he was up with Shohei Ohtani. But, it was a great show. Pete Alonso is a hell of a home run hitter. And, we've seen it playing against him in the division, but he really put it on a show last night.
I loved it. I thought it was really entertaining. It's funny, you know, I've kind of drifted in and out with the home run derby over the years, and then Berman got on my nerves, and maybe I'd never watched the whole thing. I think my wife and I sat there last night. Maybe this is an indication of how bored we are, how many things we don't have going on in our life, but I almost watched the whole thing, and I did think it was a big show. And with Soto and Ohtani, they just wore each other out, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the highlight for me. So I was a little annoyed that they didn't show home run. Like they I don't know, the camera shot didn't show the field. It was sort of a weird touch screen where you couldn't see all the home runs that were being hit. So I wasn't happy with ESPN with how they did the broadcast. But yeah, it was a great show. And Ohtani and Soto, that was one of the highlights.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that last night. In years past, was the pitching slower because it was almost like they couldn't keep up with the home runs? But you're right. You know, I didn't know if some of them were leaving the park.
Yeah, you actually, I mean, I remember pretty clearly in home runs derby past, you had a clear shot of the whole ballpark, the whole outfield, and you see when someone hit a home run and when they didn't. And in this case, they only showed some of the home runs. It was sort of bizarre how they set it up.
All right, so the Nationals are 6 games out. The Cardinals are terrible right now. They're 8 games out. There was a lot of talk about Max Scherzer, but then the Nationals started to pick it up. Where is that discussion in D.C. right now?
Yeah, I don't think we'll be trading. Even if we fall out of the race, I don't think we'll be trading Max Scherzer. Remember, the whole Bryce Harper trade situation was a big issue when he was a free agent or in that free agent year, and fans didn't want to trade him. We're in contention. We're, what, five or six games back. We're in close enough. I don't think we're going to sell at this point.
And that was my sense. I think that's our sense here in St. Louis. All right. I guess from baseball, we got to do some politics. Here's Greg Abbott, the Texas governor.
Isn't that the most un-Texan thing you've ever heard? Texans running from a fight. They're quitters. It's like during a football game or a baseball game, taking their equipment when they're way behind and just leaving the field.
Not a bad analogy. They tried to do this. Democrats did in Wisconsin many years ago. I remember that being a story as well. But isn't this kind of cowardly? Josh, what's your take on this?
Well, they did it in Texas, too, in 2004, I want to say, with Rick Perry as governor. And the Texas Rangers, I think, had to go looking for the state legislative Democrats. Look, I mean, I don't understand what their end game is. The laws get passed. They're not really helping their political cause, I don't think. In fact, the initial plan, according to reports, was they wanted to go to West Virginia and Arizona to lobby the two Democrats who don't support blowing up the filibuster or have hesitation about this voting rights bill. And then they realized that was not good politics, that going against your own party is only going to hurt the message, hurt the argument. So I don't think they really thought this through. And I also think that, like, showing off, like, a party-like atmosphere on your bus,
right,
the Miller Lite, like, it seems too much. You're talking about democracy being at risk, which is absurd hyperbole, but at the same time, you're partying on a bus with a bunch of Miller Lite. I mean, it just was not a good imagery, was not a good message, I think, for them, even for their cause.
I really do kind of try to break things down and say, okay, what would I, you know, let's take the politics or try to strip down as much of my opinion out of it, and how would I look at this from the outside? I don't see a way that this plays well for Democrats. Let's say you're just sort of a middle-of-the-road voter in Texas or anywhere, and you see this behavior, you're going to think it was a joke.
Yeah, I don't know how, I mean, I think it's to be determined how this will play nationally, but Texas, there are a lot of big elections in Texas, and Democrats had been confident they were making strides. They were gaining ground after the 2018 election. I don't know. I don't know how this plays nationally. I'm pretty confident this does not play well with the suburban middle-of-the-road voters in Texas, and it's going to make it harder for any gubernatorial candidate or any, you know, future Senate candidate against Ted Cruz to really make any inroads.
But, Josh, beyond that, and we talked about this with Georgia, and obviously the RNC had their ad last night during the All-Star game. Are there things that are in these bills, even in the case of Texas, that are stunning examples of voter suppression by the Republicans?
Mark, I hate that these are complicated bills, but the best, most general way to describe many of these bills is that they basically revert back to the election rules before the pandemic. You know, during the pandemic, states had to come up with emergency measures, have drive-by voting or have drop boxes that make it more convenient for people who understandably didn't want to vote inside for fear of getting sick, right? So there was a lot of – they set up a lot of provisions for voters who were uncomfortable being inside an indoor voting booth to have other opportunities to cast ballots. These bills, Texas and Georgia in particular, most of what these bills do, kind of not only they don't just go back to 2019, they actually codify laws that actually allow for drop boxes. They allow for extended early voting, but not to where things were in 2020 during the pandemic. So, like, if you think of the 2020 as like the emergency election year where, you know, states were understandably in a rush to come up with unique ways to vote, like, if you use that as the baseline, sure, it's you know, it's voter suppression. But if you think 2019 was perfectly normal or 2018, if you think, you know, pre-pandemic elections were pretty well done, then this should not be anything to be panicked about.
This is
pretty much normal how elections were run before the pandemic.
Josh Krasauer from the National Journal with me this afternoon. What was your take on what happened at CPAC over the weekend?
Yeah, well, CPAC was always sort of a clown show. It's gotten worse.
It has gotten worse.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I feel the same way. I thought that there was some legitimacy to CPAC years ago. I used to cover it pretty intently, but it has become kind of a joke, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is disturbing that the new cause celeb on the right is rejecting vaccines. You know, like coming up with conspiracy theories about vaccines. Like first it was elections, now it's vaccines. This is not healthy, it's not constructive, and it's not a movement that's going to win many elections.
No, on that front, though, I think this is interesting. And, you know, I sense things here from the middle of the country that some folks on the coast might not, although you're dialed into this, Josh, I'm not talking about you, but you wrote a piece a couple of months ago called Against the Grain. This is from your column, Against the Grain. It's anything but the economy stupid. The president hopes that a strong economy fueled by his policies will lead his party to victory in 2022, but that's a misreading of our political moment. You wrote that a couple of months ago. That political moment has, I think, even been energized since then, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I made the point in that column that people are voting on cultural issues. They're voting on cultural issues. They're not voting on the state of the economy anymore, unless it maybe was really bad. But the issues that animating both Democrats and Republicans are issues that are not your traditional day-to-day bread and butter economic issues. And on the Republican side, there are a couple issues that they're leaning heavily in on that are cultural issues, but do affect voters on a day-to-day basis, and it's crime and law and order. And it's education, and it's now being deemed race theory being taught in the law school system. Those issues that, unlike denied election results, directly do affect a lot of voters and actually impact people on a day-to-day basis. And I think you're going to see those issues being very much front and center for the midterms next year. And Republicans could actually see some points in the suburbs with middle-of-the-road voters on those two issues.
Is it your sense that Democrats don't get that right now?
Well, the problem is the Democratic Party, even though their voters are actually more moderate, but by definition than Republicans right now, the leadership, the elite, so to speak, are kind of in their own bubble. They see how realize what's going on and what affects the large majority of Americans in the country. So they are either for their own ideological reasons or we just don't get it. They don't deal with some of the day-to-day issues that voters face are blind to the challenge of violence in almost every major city in the country. I mean, you know, this in St. Louis,
right?
Mark,
yeah.
The crime rate has gone up dramatically in the last year. That's a data. I mean, that's, you know, even if you live in the suburbs and you try to go to the city or you have business in the city, you see this on a regular basis. The notion that Democrats were running, or at least indulging this defund the polls activism until they realize that the polls show crime is suddenly one of the top, if not the top issue. I mean, it's kind of political malpractice, but they're belatedly realizing that these are big issues and they have to respond to them.
So we had another example a week ago, you know, over the holiday of our member of the squad here, Cori Bush, getting more attention. There's a part of me that doesn't even want to talk about it because I think that's what she's looking for. But clearly deciding that if you're African-American, if you're black, if you're a person of color in this country, you cannot celebrate Independence Day because it does not mean freedom for all. She's doubling down on these things. And, you know, I think there is a theory that she's doing it to get attention and it's kind of working, isn't it?
It is. And it hurts the Democratic Party. It hurts her own party. I mean, she is what she's saying about this country and a lot of the things she tweets out. It's politically toxic. It's not supported by a majority of voters in her own party. And yet, because she has this megaphone on social media, Democrats in Washington they're scared of running her. They don't want to challenge these radical ideas, radical lawmakers. And that's the problem. Republicans have a Trump problem in that their voters are supporting Trump and not helping themselves politically in that sense. Democrats are, you know, they do have moderate voters in their party right now, yet the moderates are getting scared. They're this majority because they don't want to confront some of the true radicals, true extremists in their own party policy.
Josh Krausauer from the National Journal. We got to get you a new phone, though. For whatever reason, your phone line is just terrible. And I'm going to do a GoFundMe. How does that sound?
Well, I'm in Ohio, so maybe that's blame the cell service in the Cleveland, Ohio area.
We will. Are you there for business or pleasure?
We're covering elections always, Mark.
All right. Well, it's always work. It's always work. All work and no play for Josh K., although, you know, you got baseball to pay attention to. That makes no fun for you. So good luck with Cleveland and Ohio and the cell phone towers. We'll talk soon, Josh. Thank you very much, as always.
Thanks, Mark.
Josh Krausauer with the National Journal, and he's spot on with his assessment about where the hot moment is in politics right now, because I think that the sense is from the Obama administration and Democrats, they can focus on the economy. There was somebody, I think it was a Washington Post piece. This was probably not a bad suggestion. I'd have to look this up, but they said the economy, something else, and weed. Focus on those three things. You might have something there, but right now they're not doing that. And the Republicans have a lot of movement on CRT, and they have moderates on their side. So a long time till the election next year, but some strong undercurrents. There's no doubt about that. We'll come back with much more Sue's News after 4. When the stars realign, we are gonna let it shine. I think these guys just got announced for a gig at the Factory out in Chesterfield with Joan Jett in August. But I looked online yesterday, and by the way, I'm willing to pay this. The tickets started at $69.50.
Whoa.
But this is, you know, Cheap Trick is an act that would play either a bigger venue, they'd warm up for somebody, maybe play Stiefel. So it'll be curious to see how well they sell. But it's Joan Jett on the bill, too. Cheap Trick, one of my favorite bands of all time. I've seen them. The only band I've seen more times is the E Street Band.
Wow.
So love the boys from Rockford, Illinois. Dave, we got to try to get Dax Nielsen on the show.
We had Dax
on the show. Dax is Rick Nielsen's son. He's now the drummer for Cheap Trick. They had a bit of a divorce with Bunny Carlos, the legendary drummer. But they had a little bit of a side family project. If I remember this correctly, it was Rick, Dax, and Dax's sister, who I was unclear that was in music. And they were going to come to a small club. You remember which one it was, Dave? Last March.
Off the top of my head, no.
So the beginning of March, Dax Nielsen comes on, talks about this gig. Hey, let's come out if you're a Cheap Trick fan. 2 days later, done. Pandemic. Everything shuts down.
Whoops.
No concerts. That was probably the last musical interview that I did in March of, well, you know, ahead of the pandemic or during the pandemic, because everything stopped at that point. So
can I just say, the last time I saw Joan Jett, I believe she was opening for the Police at the Arena in the 80s. Ta-da!
I saw that show. And you know what? She was opening.
Wasn't
she? Did open for the Police.
And she got booed a little bit. We were just waiting for the Police.
Oh, I don't remember that. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that was a big tour.
It was
a big, big tour. Synchronicity tour. All right, so now you have, let me get into a little Critical Race Theory stuff before the top of the hour. You have people on the left that are going to fight back and try to tell you things and tell you how stupid you are. And I want to warn you about this, because this is, you're going to hear this more and more often. So this is actor John Leguizamo, and he goes on this rant. Dave, I have to play this if for no other reason that Dave took about 20 minutes just to edit this.
It took some work.
Okay, wow. So he's going through the critical race theory stuff, and here's what it is, and he's giving his definition, and he says, well, this is pretty highbrow stuff. You know, it's not being taught to your kids. So listen to what he says here, if I can play it without going back to the original spot.
No one is teaching this stuff to your young kids, so calm the down. It's pretty highbrow college-level stuff. And if your kids go to college, they're going to definitely be exposed to this whether you agree with it, no matter what you think, okay? So again, calm the down.
All right, I'm going to calm the F down and tell John Leguizamo that I think it's fine. If you want to get into college, you're in academia, higher levels of academia, absolutely. Go for it. That's not what we're talking about. And we're talking about kids like my daughter's age being indoctrinated. And I'll give you an example here in a second.
Critical race theory is an evolving discipline. And part of the mainstream thinking in the field is that because laws and attitudes are constantly changing, CRT also has to constantly change. So none of this is set in stone. So relax, calm the down.
Okay, well, parents are not going to calm the F down because they see these types of things. Now, you may say, I'm going to give you an example here of what happened in Virginia, in the Loudoun County Public Schools. This was in May and June of last year, and there was equity collaborative training. Now, you can say, well, look, Mark, this is training for the teachers. It's not pushing this off on the students. Are you kidding me? If you're that naive, of course they're going to push it on the students. So, if you're, for example, Red State wrote about this today. They said, if you're a Christian following the doctrine of Galatians 3:28, you will be considered incompetent, because this is a highlight from the training. The culturally competent professional does not profess color blindness. You can only be considered a competent educator if you make sure to focus on race above character. So this is actually from the event that took place in Virginia. Culturally competent professionals accept responsibility for their own racism, sexism, heterosexism, etc. Attempt to deal with them in a non-defensive, guilt-free manner. They have begun the process of defining a new, non-oppressive, and non-exploitative attitude. In terms of racism, for example, addressing one's whiteness is crucial for effective teaching. The one thing that is always at play here with CRT or whatever might be happening with the teachers or in corporate America, Raytheon was the latest example, is you have to come to terms with your whiteness. If you don't come to terms with how evil you are as a white person, well, we stop right there. That's Critical Race Theory 101. Joy Reid's going to try to tell you it's not happening, that conservatives are being hysterical. John Leguizamo is trying to tell you that, because they're going to say, look, it's just Republicans hate black history. They don't want this taught in the classrooms. Absolutely has nothing to do with that. And that's why I had Ross Hunt on last night. If you missed that interview, you should check it out. He was outstanding. We aired it around 5:25. At this point, you can still use the Odyssey rewind function. Go back to 5:25, but it's on the podcast as well. And Ross is down in Texas, and he had a great roadmap for how a school district there took on some school board members and won over the battle of CRT. And the other thing he told me, we talked a little bit off the record as well, that in many of these situations, sorry, that was really loud there. In many of these situations, you're finding the polling is overwhelming, even with moderate people and moderate Democrats, because it's like defund the police. That will come as no surprise. So don't listen to John Leguizamo as he spreads all that stuff. My feeling is, honestly, I think John Leguizamo has no clue. He's right about his description of what happens in critical race theory in higher academia. He is obviously ignorant and naive to how it's seeping into schools across the country.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.